Hello, my name is Marty. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is May 30th. It's Memorial Day. And instead of having my sponsor speak, he's going to do a pirate show for us. So, I didn't realize that I was an alcoholic until I tried to quit drinking. And my life was unmanageable, and I wanted to change. I wanted the whole life change. So I decided, and I was familiar with the program a little bit, so I decided, I'm going to change my life and at least get sober. I didn't realize what I would get out of it, and I got a lot more than I thought I would. There's a group by my house called the Old School Group, and I started going in there, and the Old School Group is just that. It's the old school. I mean, there's a lot of old people there. It's like the majority of the people have 10 years plus. So when I brought up the topic of what I could do when I'm detoxing, any special cures or anything, I didn't get much of a response. But, I kept coming back. Like the second or third day, I was going in there. And the meeting started at 7, but I thought they started at 8 for some reason. So I would show up at 7:55 all the time and walk in just in time for the Lord's Prayer. There had to be a couple guys in there that saw me. And I guess I had written on my forehead. So, they came and approached me, and they did for me what I couldn't do for myself, which was reach out, and they gave me caring and understanding. And for a guy, it's kind of weird. Maybe chicks can do that kind of stuff, but guys, that doesn't really, we don't do that kind of stuff. But it's what I needed, And those people turned out to be real good friends of mine. One of them is one of my best friends, Rich, and the other one is my sponsor and a real good friend. And he could be my friend and my sponsor because he separates the two. He takes this program really serious. And we have a great time together. We crack up. He make me laugh more than anybody in the world. But when it comes to the program, he's really serious. He's dead serious because he knows he's dealing with people's lives. He knows that people die from this disease. And it's nothing to joke around about. And that's good because I'm a little bit of a goofball, so I could use that. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce my sponsor, my friend, my dog, Steve.
I'm Steve, I'm alcoholic. Wow. I remember when Marty came into the meeting 5 minutes before it ended, and he was a guy that you'd look right at him, man, and he was 100% hopeless, I remember looking at Rich and saying, man, that guy's not going to make it, and it's amazing to see him stick his hand out to people today, it's amazing what the program of Alcoholics Anonymous can do to people like us, it's awesome. I appreciate it that you let me be a part of your sobriety, man. And thank everybody for reading. Welcome to Peyton and to Nick. This is the best home group in the whole world. Don't let anything I say ever stop you from attending another meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, my sobriety date is January 23rd of 2006. That's when I came stumbling into you guys. And I have a sponsor, and I sponsor others, and this is my home group. And I like to get that stuff out right in the beginning because those things are the most important thing in my life today. Without those three things in my life, there'd be no God and there'd be no sobriety, and therefore I'd have nothing else in my life. I'm going to try to tell you guys in a general way really quick what I was like, what happened, get out of here, let Mike come up here and clean up the mess, I was born in Paterson, New Jersey, I don't remember a lot about my childhood. I'm not one to go dig, but from what I do remember, I have brothers, I have one sister, and I have a lot of brothers, I have an awesome family. My parents are still together to this day. My dad's a hard worker. When I was a little kid, I played sports, and I looked up to my dad. I wanted to be just like him, and my mom she stayed at home, and she took care of the family, and she took care of the kids, and looking back, us kids we were my mom's whole life. That she didn't work, she didn't do nothing. Her care and concern for us was her whole life. So basically, we moved down here. I think I was 9. I might have been younger. You guys might want to ask Blair. I'm not sure. But when I moved down here, I hear a lot of things in Alcoholics Anonymous about not fitting in. The main thing I can remember about my childhood, man, is that I was never okay with where and who I was with, you know? I always wanted to be somewhere else with someone else doing something else, you know? I was never okay with now. And, you know, my mom would always tell me that, you know, I was a schedule man, you know? If I was sleeping at my friend's house on Friday, I was planning what we were doing on Sunday, you know? Because I was never okay. That's a form of being uncomfortable in your skin, you know? I didn't know that until I made it to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. But by the time I was 13 years old, that's the time I picked up my first drink. And at this time, you know, they said I had ADD and all this stuff in school. And, you know, I was the class clown, and I continued to get in trouble at school because I could never sit still. And my father was my coach my whole life. You know, he was my role model. And basically he told me, he's like, Steven, either you're going to straighten up or, you know, I'm not going to be your coach anymore. And so, you know, he stood up to his end of the bargain, you know, and he stopped being my coach. And, you know, I just started hating this man for, you know, because he reeked the responsibility, you know, because he reeked the manhood, because he was the epitome of what a man should be, you know, and I couldn't live up to that. I couldn't do those things. And, you know, I started hating this man that I loved my whole life. I started hating him. You know, he would tell me, go left, I'd go right. He said up, I'd go down, you know, and I just started doing the opposite of whatever he told me to do. And by the time I was 13 years old, I kept getting suspended from school. And, you know, I decided we skipped school and stuff and drank. And, you know, the first time I drank, I didn't get drunk, you know, but my best friend did. And I remember what happened to him. It was controlled, so we couldn't drink as much as we wanted. But his older brother was pouring the liquor at that point. And my friend got wasted for a 13-year-old. I mean, I was always a small guy. This guy was crawling around on his hands and knees. He was pretending he was a lion, you know. He thought he was a cat. He was like, wow, you know, and I was like, I thought that was awesome, you know. Like, I could remember to this day, I remember the thought in my head vividly is, like, I want to feel like that. I don't know why anybody would want to feel like that, but I wanted to, you know, get me out of right here, right now. You know, I was never okay with right here, right now. And, you know, not shortly after that, I had my time to shine. You know, it was maybe a month or two later, 13 years old, and I remember I drank 2 quarts of Budweiser, you know. I probably wasn't even 100 pounds at 13 years old, and I got wasted, you know. I was always maybe a little bit introverted with the girls, and I remember we got drunk out on the corner, and man, I was talking to girls that were driving down the road a mile away, you know. I was yelling out, "Come back!" And I loved it. I loved what alcohol did for me. You know, I was completely okay with where I was at and who I was. I didn't care about anything, you know. And a great friend of mine who lives over in St. Pete by the name of Chuck said it took away his ability to care. And that's exactly what it did for me. It took away my ability to care about anything. I didn't care about what you thought about me, what you wanted me to do. I just didn't care anymore, you know. My alcoholism progressed very, very quickly, you know. It stood in the way of me accomplishing anything in my life, you know. It deprived me of those things. And, you know, it's not hard. It's not easy to get booze on. It's not easy to get booze every day when you're 13 years old, you know. So we'd steal it, you know, and get as much as we could. And you know, it wasn't long after that I was dropped out of high school. I was causing problems in my house. And you know, my parents at this time, they had 2 little kids in the house, you know, and they were like 6 and 1, 6 and 2. I don't even know how old. They were just babies. They were just little kids, man. And you know, I would bring things into their house and drop them and be blacked out and leave stuff laying around that my little brothers could pick up and put in their mouth and die from, you know. And me, selfish and self-centered to the core, you know, I didn't even think about those things, you know. And immediately when they told me they found it, it was like, all right, give it back, you know, like no harm, no foul, you know. And that's the kind of person I was, you know, growing up. I had no regard for any other human being on the face of this earth, not even my parents, you know, not even my brothers or sister. And I ran through people's lives, you know. And by the time I was 15 years old, I overdosed a couple times. My parents caught wind of this thing called Baker Act. So every time I'd come home, I'd be like blacked out and wasted. They would call the cops and be like, "Yeah, for sure, he wants to kill himself." And they would come and get me. You know, they'd come and get me. And I'd get there, you know, a couple times overdosed. And the psychologist or whatever, the therapist, they, why are you trying to hurt yourself, you know? And I wasn't, you know. My answer to them was like, I was trying to have a good time, you know. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, I didn't know I had an inability to not be able to stop, you know. I just kept going. And basically, after I got Baker acted a whole bunch of times, when I was 16 years old, I got into some trouble, blacked out some more, ended up going into another person's home, doing some bad things, and, you know, my father found out, and you're not the smartest criminal when you're loaded and you got a whole bunch of whiskey and barbiturates and you leave stuff laying around everywhere, you know, and he found it, and, you know, he gave me an ultimatum at the age of 16. He's like, Steven, you know, either you're going to jail or you're going to rehab. And, you know, I don't claim to be the smartest guy, but I was like, I'll go to rehab. You know, that sounds like a fair deal. And I did. I went to Fairwinds over in Clearwater, and it was awesome. You know, I got to hang out in jogging pants, you know, drink orange juice, eat as much as I want, and listen to Eminem the whole time I was there, you know. And all I wanted to do when I got out was go get with my old friends. Go get with my old friends, you know. And that's exactly what I did. You know, I got out of there. And I went back to that same rehab to finish out my parents' insurance in 4 months. And, you know, at this point, I started causing a lot of havoc in my parents' home. You know, they're trying very desperately to raise these two little kids. And, you know, when we're in our cups and we're doing what we're doing, we're tearing down the people in our lives, you know. And my mom, I deprived her of being a good mom to my other brothers because she was always worried about me. You know, I was killing my mom. You know, I was stressing my dad out. I was straining their relationship. And they didn't know what to do with me. You know, they had no idea what to do with me. And by the time I was 17 years old, you know, I'm ripping and running. And I end up getting in trouble. You know, I got arrested for the first time when I was 17 years old. Because if you have to stay loaded the way I had to stay loaded every single day to be comfortable in your skin, then you do things, you know. And I ended up doing some things. And I got arrested. You know, I got charged as an adult when I was 17 years old, and I remember being in the courtroom over there in downtown, and I was just a 17-year-old little kid, man. You know, I was my mom's little baby, and you know, she's looking at me. She's looking at me handcuffed and shackled to, I don't know, 12, 13, 15 people, you know. And you know, the judge sentenced me that day to a year, you know, and I see my mom sitting there looking at me crying, you know, and my dad just disappointed. And all I could think about is my own comfort, you know? All I could think about was, when am I gonna get out of here? When am I gonna get out of here? I wasn't thinking about the people that I hurt. I wasn't thinking about my family. I was thinking about, look at me, poor Steven, you know? And that seems to be my problem, is I think about myself way too much. You guys will catch on to that the more I talk, so. So when I got sentenced and got sent away when I was 17, you know, I didn't want to change anything. You know, I didn't think that I was an alcoholic. I didn't know what an alcoholic was. You know, I didn't know I had an inability to stop drinking. You know, I thought that I could just stop. You know, like, be a man up. Don't drink anymore. You know, just don't do drugs. Just do this. And I thought I could control it. You know, and by the time I got out, I got right back into it. You know, I got out a year later, and you know, at this point, my brothers are getting big, you know. I'm starting to feel not a part of my family at all. You know, I'm never around. I haven't been there for Christmas. My brothers are huge, you know, and I haven't been a part of their life, you know. And that's always torn at me, like, my whole life. I remember when I would go away and stuff, I always wanted to be a big brother. You know, I always wanted to take my brothers to the park and just throw the baseball or take them to the movies. I just wasn't able to do those things. And you know, I ended up ripping and running as soon as I got out of there again, and you know, it got really bad. You know, I started couch surfing, going from place to place, and you know, at this point in my life, my parents, they moved from Tampa to Spring Hill because when I got arrested the first time, it was kind of a scene in their neighborhood, and they just wanted to get out of there. And you know, my own parents, they had to buy a safe for their house. And this wasn't because they lived in a bad neighborhood, you know. This wasn't because they were afraid of burglars, you know. It was because of their own son was taking anything that he could, you know. And I even drilled into their safe, you know, like they wouldn't find out, you know. And, man, I was crazy, you know. And I just remember, like, I just, every time I go to my parents' house, man, they just had to always be keeping their eyes on Steven, you know, because he never knew what he was going to take or what he was going to do. You know, I swore that I told them a million times how I'm going to stop, you know, firm resolution. I'm not going to do this no more. And you know, I kept going. And by the time I was 20 years old, I ended up getting arrested again, you know. And at this time, when I got arrested, you know, man, I was bad, you know, I was in rough shape, you know, I was in such rough shape that I wouldn't have been able to make it to court if it wasn't for the guy I hated that brought me there every month, you know, my father. You know, I hated this guy's guts, but he'd wake me up every month and be like, come on, you got to go to court, and he'd make sure I'd get there, you know, and I remember I'd sit there month after month after month, and then finally after 6 months, our lawyer came up to us, like, Mr. Holloman, got some great news for you. I'm like, okay, you know, what is it? And he was like, we're going to go ahead and get you 4 years probation, you know, and I was amazed, you know, to be honest with you guys, I was like, that's awesome, you know, I get to go home today. You know, some people get excited about new cars, maybe a house, maybe a relationship. I get excited about 4 years probation, you know. I wanted to go home, you know, that was the only thing on my mind, is like, I get to go home. And I'll never forget the look on my father's face when I was sitting in the courtroom and my lawyer told me that, you know, he looked over at me and, you know, he shook his head, you know, he just shook his head. And I was like, what's the matter, you know? And he's like, you can't do it, you know, you can't do 4 years probation, you know? And I'm like, yeah, I can, you know, yeah, I can do it, man. I'm gonna go and get my GED, you know? I'm gonna go and get a job, you know? I'm gonna go and get my own place. I'm gonna grow up. I'm gonna become a man, you know? And he knew, when I got here, everybody knew that I needed to be here, that I needed to be somewhere, you know what I mean? Except me, you know? And I remember I got loaded immediately after I got home from court, you know, and 4 months later, I had to go see my probation officer every month, and she told me at the third month, you know, she's like, next month, you know, we're going to give you UAs, we're going to make sure you're all clean, we gave you some time to get all that stuff out your system. And I was 20 years old, and I remember sitting in my parents' bathroom, and I was getting loaded, you know, the morning of going to my probation office. And I remember the thought going through my head is, what can they possibly do to me to make my life any worse? What can they possibly do to me to make me feel any worse than I feel right now? And I was 20 years old, you know, and they sent me to prison. You know, they made it worse, for sure, you know. They sent me to prison, and I remember when I got sentenced to prison, I was 20 years old, and I immediately went back to the county jail, and in Spring Hill, and you know, I called my parents, and to be honest with you guys, I called them because this was their fault I was going to prison. You know, they didn't get me a good enough lawyer. It was their fault. You know, it had nothing to do with my actions, and I was calling them to let them know, you know, I'm pissed at you guys. And my little brother picked up the phone, you know, and at this time, you know, he's like 11 years old, you know, and for some reason, this kid, I don't know why he would see anything in me, you know, but for some reason he loved me as a big brother, you know, and I loved him, you know, and I wanted to be a part of his life so bad. And he picked up the phone and he was like, Steven, are you gonna be home for my birthday this year? And I was like, no, I'm not gonna be able to make it, buddy, you know. And I asked him if he knew why, and he said, yes, because you're going to prison, you know. And then I asked him if he knew why I was going to prison, and the best answer a little kid could give me was because I drink too much. You know, he just saw that. That's a little kid observing our actions, you know, and he told me what my problem was, you know, and it blew me away, you know, and it hurt really bad, you know. Those are the things that hurt me the most when I was out there. I mean, I did a lot of crummy things, you know, and the people I hurt the most are the people that share my last name. You know, I walk all over them, and to this day, I still take advantage of the people that are closest to me. You know, and I don't know why I do that. You know, maybe because I got their affection already. I don't know. But I still tend to do that. And this time when I went to prison, you know, I started to maybe think, like, maybe I got a problem with drinking. You know, looking back through my life, I was like, well, every time I drink, you know, I go places, and maybe I should stop, you know. It never occurred to me that I couldn't, you know. And this whole time I was away, I was writing letters to my mom, and she wrote me every single week I was away, man. You know, they kept money in my commissary, make sure I was eating, and they just loved me, man. You know, they took care of me. And when I got it, I mean, if you'd have strapped me to a poly when I was in there and said I wasn't going to drink no more, I meant it with all my heart. You know, when I was like, Mom, I'm going to be a good son. You know, I'm going to be a good brother. I'm not going to do these things anymore. You know, and I was drunk 12 hours after I got out of prison. You know, and it just proves to me, you know, I mean, it talks about in the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, how we have forgetters, you know, where we quickly forget the pain and suffering of a week, a month ago, 12 hours ago, You know, we forget about those things, you know, and it also talks about without a spiritual experience, I won't be able to conquer this illness, you know, and I didn't know that. I had no idea, you know, and I thought I just could stop. And man, it got real bad. I was 22 years old, and things got really, really, really bad in my house, my parents' house. I had everything for me. You know, my parents would let me stay at their house. They would give me the opportunities I needed to get ahead in life if I only stopped drinking, you know, and I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it, so I couldn't live under their roof, you know. And finally, me and my dad had a talk, and I remember I was talking with him, and I remember telling my dad this. I remember looking at him and saying, "Dad, like, there's something wrong with me." And he was like, "Yes, yeah, I agree." You know, he was pissed when he said, he's like, "I agree there's something wrong." But I didn't know what it was. I was like, who in their right mind would continue to do these kind of things? Who would do that? I had no idea, you know. And he eventually kicked me out of my parents' house and basically told me, you know, his job is to protect his family, you know. And I had siblings in the house. He had a wife. And I was tearing my family apart. And, at that time, you know, I became homeless at 22 years old, you know, and I was going from place to place, and I just used things up, man, you know, that's what I did in my life. I used things up. If you had what I wanted, I'd use you up until you were dry, and then I'd throw you aside like a piece of trash, you know. And basically where my drinking took me is when I was 22 years old, I was homeless. I used to call my mom to meet me on the corner to bring me sandwiches just to make sure I was eating. I was 138 pounds. I was yellow. I looked like death probably. And, you know, how strong that woman was just to be able to come and meet me. And she just wanted to make sure I was eating. You know, she was looking at me dying. I mean, I look at people in here dying all the time. That was my mom looking at me, you know. And it must have killed her. She's a strong woman, you know, very, very strong woman. And, I remember a week prior to getting sober, you know, when you run out of options, when you want to check out at 22 years old, when you just don't want to go no more, you know, what do all tough guys do? We call our moms, you know, and I called my mom. You know, my mom's been there for me through my whole entire life, you know. I definitely believe that I've had God-inspired people in my life, my whole life, you know, and my mom is definitely one of them, you know, and she picked up that phone after all the times I stole, after all the times I lied, after all the heartbreaks, broken promises. She still picked up the phone. And, you know, I told her, I was like, "I'm done. I'm done. I need help. I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do." And, you know, she got me into a program up in Newport Richey. I think it's government, right? I don't know. But anyway, it's called CRC. And that was January 23rd of 2006, you know. And I had absolutely no idea what I was in for, you know. I had absolutely no idea the things that I'd have to do in order to stay here, you know. I didn't know what my problem was, you know. And, man, I'm so glad that when I came into my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that there was big books Alcoholics Anonymous walking around and shaking hands and pulling me into the middle of them, you know, because I was scared to death, man. You know, I've heard speakers say they've been to prison and they were more scared coming here. That was the scariest thing in my life, was coming here. I was uncomfortable. I didn't want to look people in the eyes. I didn't know how to have a regular conversation with you. I didn't know about current events. I didn't know what was going on. I was so self-centered. I didn't know anything that was going on in the world. I was just freaking out all the time, you know. And, you know, guys like me knew what to do. They were sober, you know, and they stuck their hand out to me, and they welcomed me to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know. And these guys, you know, they were older, and they had wives, you know, they had their own kids, they had their own family, they had jobs, they were busy. You know, we get busy when we get older, you know, we have a lot of things going on. And they still made it important to pick me up and take me to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous every single day, you know. And that's why I still attend a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous every single day, you know, because what if them guys that were sitting there that one night didn't want to go to a meeting that night? You know, what if they'd rather watch a movie with their wife? You know, what if they'd rather just lay on the couch and watch baseball? I might not be here today. You know, so I definitely believe it's my responsibility to show up to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous every single day, as long as I'm able to, you know. And I'm able to right now at this point in my life, you know, and I've been able to ever since I've been sober. And, you know, my sponsor got me immediately right into the steps, and it wasn't very hard. You know, my first step is like, was a wasteland. Like, I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, and there wasn't one area in my life that I could say, wow, I'm doing pretty good there. You know, it was bad. Everything was bad. There was no good. So it was very easy for me to be like, okay, I'll do that. Okay, I'll do this. And, you know, I've had I believe I'm a byproduct of my home group, you know. I believe I'm a byproduct of sponsorship, you know. I love my home group, you know. I got here and they taught me how to be a service to another alcoholic, you know. And to me, that's what it's all about, you know. It says that if we don't do those things, we're not going to be able to survive the certain low spots ahead, you know. And I've had plenty of low spots in my sobriety since I've been here for 4.5 years, you know. I've had times in my sobriety where I didn't know how I was going to buy dinner, you know, when I didn't know how I was going to pay for my rent, you know. And you know, my sponsor would always point out, you know, if we do God's work, you know, then God takes care of what we need. And and that's been my experience, you know. At the time, it didn't feel like it. It's like, I don't understand, why should I go to a jail meeting, you know? How is that going to pay my rent, you know? But God takes care of me. All I have to do is do my work here, you know. And basically my fourth and fifth step was very vital to me in my sobriety, you know. For the first time in my life, I shared with another human being every single thing about me, you know. When I got there, I didn't know what a fifth step was. I thought it was a book report. I filled it out, and he told me to come over, so I went to drop it off to his house and be like, just let me know how I did. And I had to read it to him, man, you know. And I remember for the first time in my life, I remember for the first time in my life thinking that I had a shot here in Alcoholics Anonymous. I remember that the first time in my life that I felt a God in my life, you know. And this is just my experience, you know. I felt like I belonged here in Alcoholics Anonymous, that I wasn't just some bad person. I was just a sick person, you know, and you guys were teaching me how to get well, you know. And I love you guys a lot. Thank you for letting me come here and share with you guys. There's been huge gifts in my life, you know. They could be gifts. I call them privileges. You know, my dad, I hated him my whole life. I just want to share with you guys real quick. I hated this guy, you know. Me and him today have the best relationship in the world, man, you know. It's unbelievable to me that, you know, I go up to their house and I could walk around, you know. I don't even know if they have their safe anymore, you know. They just let me walk around. They're like, go ahead. And I'm part of my little brothers. They're both bigger than me now. One's 17 and one's 14. And they're both bigger than me. And the most amazing thing to me is that someone's phone's ringing up here. It's not mine. And basically I've had relationships with my brothers now. Like, I get to ask every single one of my brothers to stand with me in my wedding. I'm getting married in 10 months from now, you know. A self-centered guy like me, you know, I found an awesome woman, you know. I love her with all my heart. She's awesome, you know. She deals with my selfishness, self-centeredness, my hard-headedness, and I love it, you know. She's awesome. And I get to have my little brothers and my older brother, I get to have my family stand with me in my wedding, you know. I can't believe that. I can't believe that, you know what I mean? And I got to talk with my mom yesterday, and I love my mom. I love her so much, you know. And maybe sometimes I don't show her I love her all the time as much as I should. And I just called her yesterday and I told her I love her so much, I thank you so much. I just want her to know that I never don't forget what she did for me. I don't forget. My mom used to come and make sure I was breathing at nighttime to make sure I was still alive. She used to do that when I was 20 years old, check my breath, you know. And all she wants is me to come up maybe once or twice a month to show her I love her, you know. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me, you know, is to show up for life, you know, even if I don't want to. Do things that are uncomfortable until it makes you comfortable. Congratulations, and Marty, thank you guys for letting me share.